The Tom Woods Show, episode 1320.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, the 2019 Contra Cruise is going to be coming up before you know it. It is the libertarian event of the year. Naomi Brockwell, a guest on the show, recently said it was the best event she had ever been to. We're going to be joined by special guests Gene Epstein and Brad and Deidre Berzer this year. Join Bob Murphy and me and a ton of wonderful, genial folks for the adventure of a lifetime as we set sail for Alaska July 5th through the 12th, 2019. Get the details at ContraCruise.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm going to talk about an article I read the other day, and it has to do with a little spiel Tucker Carlson gave not long ago. And that had to do with the idea that there are people out there who just fetishize the free market. And we need to recognize that there are other values in life other than economic efficiency. And we need to have an economy that's more in line with what families need and so on and so forth. So for its supporters, it's being portrayed as this fresh new thinking. But as somebody who has criticized this line of thought for a while, I can tell you it's been around for a long, long time. It goes back, I would say it goes back to G.K. Chesterton. It's that kind of thinking. And given that I'm somebody who very much, you know, I love children and I want to encourage families to have a lot of children, I'm not the sort of guy, I guess you would think, would be opposed to, you know, family-friendly economy, whatever this project is. But it's one of those things that the name of it makes it sound benign, but then when you look at it more closely, it's terrible. It's like most federal legislation. The name is very attractive sounding, but the actual substance of it, well, not so much. So the article I'm looking at is urging us to support Tucker Carlson, and it's written by some fellow I've never heard of named, I guess, Stephen Cox. His last name is spelled K-O-K-X, and he says, I'm just going to read you bits and pieces of it, and I'm going to just go through it, I think, and just talk about what jumps out at me. Now, I could go through and take some time to talk about what's going on with wages and what might be accounting for why people aren't doing as well as they'd like to do, and we could talk about the effects of monetary policy on income inequality and wealth inequality. We could talk about the growth of government, the regulatory state, all kinds of things we could talk about. I have some episodes on that kind of thing, and I have an episode with Gene Epstein on that kind of thing, and also evaluating whether wages really have gone down, because it turns out that, as Robert Higgs points out, when you add in fringe benefits, which disproportionately have accounted for people's compensation in recent decades as compared to before, then actually the picture is much brighter. But we'll leave all that aside, because that's, although that's interesting and important, it's not really central to the argument here, because I wish somebody could make a better case for this, because I would like to be wrestling with this more than I am. I would like to be given a real challenge here. So here's what we get. First, we get this quotation from Tucker Carlson. Anyone who thinks the health of a nation can be summed up in GDP is an idiot. Okay. Agreed. I know no one who believes that. Then we read this. This is from now our friend Stephen Cox. He says, Carlson has violated the cardinal sin of the modern day Republican Party, questioning the infallibility of the market. So this is where people like this just lose me. Now, this article, in case you're wondering, is on LifeSite News. And I bet probably half and half, if I were to break down my audience, half of you would have heard of LifeSite News and half not. I happen to like LifeSite News. I think it breaks a lot of interesting stories. I'm inclined to agree with it on a lot of things. But on this, oh my gosh, this article is grotesque. Obviously, I'm going to link to it at tomwoods.com/1320. But could you imagine looking at the modern Republican Party? And he even says the modern day Republican Party. So he's not talking about Calvin Coolidge, where you, at least you could make a plausible case. He's talking about the Republican Party of John McCain and George W. Bush. That's the party that won't question the infallibility of the market. That's what he thinks. Now, meanwhile, maybe he's talking about the Trump Republican Party. But even that, I mean, Trump was talking about you need mandated family leave and programs like that to help people. So that, I don't know where that's coming from. George W. Bush implemented Medicare Part D, No Child Left Behind, the bank bailouts, the TARP program. He favored government intervention to promote home ownership. We could go on and on. I mean, major, major things. Not like I have to dig around to find some small thing. Major things. John McCain, he was prepared to throw trillions of dollars at bad mortgages. So they wanted bailouts of all sorts. I don't know anybody who at the time was critical of the interventionist policies of Alan Greenspan at the Federal Reserve. And yet we're told in this article that the problem with Tucker Carlson, according to his critics, is that he questions the infallibility of the market. Republicans don't like when people do that. That's not Carlson's problem. All Republicans question the infallibility of the market. They all do. They all have some pet project or 28 pet projects they want to intervene in the marketplace. That's what they do. So right away, that makes me annoyed. And then later he starts talking about the neocons as if the neocons and the Republican Party are exactly the same thing. They're not, but at least, you know, they're in the ballpark. There are a lot of neocons who, at least up to now, have been Republicans. But the neocons are not known for being hardcore capitalists. I mean, remember, Irving Kristol, the godfather of neoconservatism, even said, two cheers for capitalism. So it seems to me if you want to criticize somebody for being too pro-market, go after us. You know, we have all three cheers for capitalism. Irving Kristol wrote a book in the late 70s called Two Cheers for Capitalism. So we have all three cheers. Attack me. Don't attack these people, the neocons of all people. I don't know very many neocons who want to end the Fed. Okay, the Fed is the most interventionist part of the whole machine. Okay, and just to pretend that that's not a big deal and say, well, these people are the hardest core capitalists I can find, that's not reasonable. I mean, I don't know that these people are opposed to any of the supranational organizations, the World Bank, the IMF, whatever. I don't know that they're against those. I would be shocked if the neocons were against those. So the neocons are not nearly as far away from this guy as he seems to think they are. Generally, he and the neocons agree that we need to have a substantial government sector. You need to have a social safety net. You need to have, well, whatever. You can go on and list them, you know, education, whatever. All these sorts of things that our critic here wants to fund. The neocons generally also want to fund them. So he's got a boogeyman that doesn't really exist. Then he goes on to say, Carlson, clearly motivated by a Christian concern for his neighbors, convincingly argued that middle America has been hollowed out by globalist policies and that the real goal of Republican economics is to, quote, make the world safe for banking. Okay, well, who knows, right? If maybe that is what Republicans want, I don't know. I couldn't care less. I'm interested in supporters of the free market. And those are the people I will speak for. And if you're against the free market or you think it needs to be tempered by Christian or family concerns, you would think you'd want to go hardcore at the people who are the most opposite of you, but not happening. Now, middle America being hollowed out, this generally falls back into the manufacturing is declining and we need manufacturing jobs and so on and so forth. But manufacturing has declined in terms of the number of people in it, not the amount of output, which has risen, the number of people in it because of rises in productivity. Same is true of China. Because of rises in productivity, you don't need as many hands doing things. So is that a trend we want to reverse? We want to just arbitrarily say, well, let's make the process more inefficient just so that these people have something to do. In fact, it turns out that the much maligned service sector pays every bit as well as the manufacturing sector. And you can go through, you can look at construction generally pays better than manufacturing. You can go on down the line. Gene Epstein had a good episode with me on this topic, just going through it. And then if it's tariffs that you favor, because that'll help middle America, well, it's true that with a steel tariff, you would be able to potentially at least protect 140,000 jobs. But you would be threatening 2 million jobs in industries that rely heavily on steel and that would be put at a competitive disadvantage if they had to pay arbitrarily high prices for steel. Or you may hear people say, well, this town was hollowed out when such and such industry collapsed. What do you propose to do about that, though? What seriously ought we to do in that situation? Gene gives the example of, I think it was Kodak in Rochester, New York. And obviously, technological changes in film that Kodak could not or did not adapt to led to the troubles that Kodak had, which meant that Rochester isn't quite the place that it once was. But what is this proposed alternative? I mean, the rest of the article here is just a lot of flowery language about GDP not being all of life, as if anyone ever said it was. And there's more to life than money, as if anyone ever denied that. And by the way, if there really is more to life than money, then why is he so upset about industries closing? You know, there's more to life than money, you know, so it's not even being consistent. But I don't understand what the alternative to that is. And it's just the case that your own prosperity depends in part on the fact that other people have had to adapt to modern conditions. That we can't just arbitrarily continue to insist on providing products and services that our fellow man doesn't need anymore or doesn't want anymore. That's antisocial. You have to adapt to think of how today can I best serve my fellow man, not my fellow man better rearrange his plans and priorities and his financial plans so as to continue to support me in providing him with something he doesn't want. Now, when you put it that way, you see how antisocial that is. Why should we want to encourage this? So, as I say, the fact that we are as prosperous as we are comes from the fact that we all have to be adapting and aware of what the market is telling us. And the market is not some phantom. It's just the collective decisions of a lot of people. And they're saying to us, we don't need blacksmiths anymore now that we have automobiles. So the blacksmiths have to do something else. And it is selfish to say, well, I'm going to persist in something that nobody needs because I matter. What, you matter more than they do? Says who? Why is that Christian? What is supposed to be Christian about any of this? I am the most important person in the world, so my concerns trump everybody else's. What's Christian about that? Isn't Christianity about serving your fellow man? I don't recall it being about, well, doggone it, I'm going to stick around here and I'm going to do whatever I darn well please, whether my fellow man likes it or not, and I'm going to make him pay for it to boot. What is Christian about this? I don't see it. Then we read this, that he's saying that what Carlson is going after is the argument that workers today make more money than at any other time in human history. If they aren't happy as a result, tough luck. Keep quiet and be grateful. You have air conditioning and a nice truck. All right, well, I don't know that anyone has ever quite spoken that way. But first of all, I think we're expecting too much from the economy if we think that it's supposed to fulfill our every longing and desire. The economy is about supplying people with things they need to flourish at the least possible expense. That's what it's about. It's not supposed to satisfy your every yearning and dream. I mean, if it seems to me that it's these critics who have some superstitious reverence about what the economy is supposed to do. They should have far more mundane expectations for the economy. So they're the ones with their heads in the clouds. And then you have air conditioning and a nice truck, so shut up. Well, I know that it's fashionable to make fun of people who say, look, you have a lot of great material advances that you should appreciate. I know it's easy to make fun of that and say, oh, but there's more to life than material things. I know that. I know that. That's right. But I bet that your life with all the things that fulfill you, good friends, good hobbies, nice place to live, I bet those things are even better if you also have air conditioning. I bet they're even better. Even if you were, let's say you were suffering from depression, okay? You're suffering from depression. Now, there's nothing the economy is really going to do for you on that. But if I were suffering from depression, I'd rather have depression and air conditioning than just depression. If my landlord were making my life miserable or something, if I had air conditioning, it would make my life 3% better. I mean, I'd still face that miserable problem, but I'd be cool with my miserable problem. Temperature-wise, I would be cool. And likewise, at least I could drive my fun truck around once in a while, give myself some innocent enjoyment. So I don't go for this. I don't think there's anything wrong with people wanting material things or saying that material things are important. Because the material things that satisfy your basic needs are what liberate you to go out and do the things that this person says we ought to want to do. Spend time with our families. Look, you want to spend time with your family in a non-capital intensive economy? Well, good luck. You'll be spending that time in the fields. Yeah, you'll see your family all day, all right. But I don't think you're going to have the quality time I have with mine. And I have that quality time because my income stretches farther because I live in a capital intensive economy that produces a lot of stuff. And that abundance makes the stuff, relatively speaking, less expensive. And that means I have to work less to earn more money. And I can opt for some leisure time to enjoy real time with my kids or to do things that are truly fulfilling for human beings. All right, now let me take just a minute to segue into telling you about something you know I love that I think is one of the great innovations of modern capitalism and that goes to show the opportunities that are just everywhere if only you grab them. And that, of course, is Skillshare. I mean, imagine a place where you would have access to 25,000 classes, each of which can teach you some kind of skill or enrich your life in some way or make you a more desirable employee or give you the wherewithal to go out on your own and create something on your own and be able to say, that's mine. I did this. And you learned it through a course on Skillshare. And these courses are on a wide variety of topics. So everything from graphic design to writing to marketing to accounting to crafts and culinary pursuits to web development, mobile development, animation, film production, you name it. That is a modern miracle. And an even bigger miracle is that listeners of The Tom Woods Show get 2 months of access to all 25,000 classes for free. That's right. Skillshare is offering Tom Woods Show listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 25,000 classes for free. To sign up, go to Skillshare.com/woodsfree. Again, go to Skillshare.com/woodsfree to start your 2 months now. That's Skillshare.com/woodsfree. All right. Then Carlson says there are a lot of ingredients to being happy: dignity, purpose, self-control, independence, above all, deep relationships with other people. Those are the things that you want for your children. Well, again, nobody argues with that. But why would we think that I would necessarily look to the economy for that, or that I would look to the state for that or something? This is what civil society does. And yeah, there are some jobs that nobody would really want to have. But in any society, there are undesirable jobs. And if you want to get out of those jobs, well, you got to do something. You got to think, how can I better serve people? Right now, this is my most value productive use, or I wouldn't be doing it. But what else could I do? How could I improve myself? What could I learn that I could get ahead in something else that I find more fulfilling and that satisfies somebody else's needs? Just because you want to skip through meadows all day doesn't mean that that is the best role for you to play in society, because it's a two-way street. It can't just be what gives you pleasure. The sweet spot is what gives you pleasure and brings satisfaction to other people. And that's from time immemorial, that's been the tricky question. Can you figure out in that Venn diagram of things that give you pleasure and things that make other people happy, can you find an overlap there? That's what the ideal job is. And people have struggled to find that. But that's nothing unique about that. That's the nature of life. Now, I don't want to dwell on what the guy says about Catholic social teaching, because as you know, I've written a book on that from a pretty radical free market perspective called The Church and the Market. You should get the 10th anniversary edition, by the way, because it has an extra chapter and a new introduction in it. I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/1320. I think it's honest to goodness, I've written popular books, popular in the sense of meant to be read by the general public, and I've written scholarly books. Then this one falls more into that category. But I think it's the most important contribution I've made is that book, The Church and the Market, from all the way back in 2005. So I strongly recommend that book to you. I'm really, really happy with how that came out. But I will just say in this paragraph, he says, he's saying that capitalism holds that taking away as many restrictions on man's economic behavior creates a space where unbridled competition is allowed the most room to grow. And next to unbridled competition, he puts, i.e., the worst effects of original sin. Aha. So the worst effects of original sin come from competition. He then goes to the next sentence to say the state must prudentially intervene in the economy. Okay, well, why is that not the worst effects of original sin? Look at the state sector. At least the private sector is limited by profit. You have to do something that serves somebody or you're not going to earn a profit. Whereas the state can do whatever it wants. It doesn't have to worry about profit and loss. It can just confiscate the resources. Why would that? I mean, look at the incentive structure created by that. They don't have to serve you. So think about that. Wouldn't that be where the worst effects of original sin would be found? And then moreover, the general public, you know, we know this from public choice analysis, the general public is too busy living their ordinary lives to stay up on all the details of politics, and politicians exploit their ignorance of what's really going on. And naturally, given that you have special interest groups, maybe it's the sugar lobby or whatever, and they want what's good for them, even though how many people in the country are in the sugar industry, right? 1/100th of 1%? I don't know. It's like nobody. But they want sugar quotas because it means higher profits for them. It also means higher prices for everybody else. But, you know, that's so dispersed over the whole country, we barely even feel it. So we're not going to bother protesting it. But meanwhile, they are silently looting the rest of us. And then you add to that other industries and other industries and other industries trying to do that. And it's all made possible by the state. Doesn't that seem like a bad effect of original sin right there? So I just the naivete about the state, you know, where he looks at the private sector and he's got every left wing. Yes, I will say that. I know traditionalists who are against the market hate being called left wing. I'm not left wing. I'm traditionalist. Yeah, okay. Yeah, whatever. He's got every left wing boogeyman view of the private sector, but he's also got every kind of starry-eyed, naive Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez view of the state. You know, the state will put things right. Don't worry about it. That's where we fight against the effects of original sin. Yeah, sure. So we then read about places in the world where you can get tax credits when you have more children. And he's saying, in effect, that look, this goes to show, and this is the Stephen Cox guy, unless otherwise noted, I'm talking about him. He's in effect saying, look, here we have places where the state is actively intervening on behalf of families and supporting families. And so by implication, that's what we should be doing too. But I'm not so sure. And again, I say this as the father of five daughters. And I think a lot of people should have five or more children. It's a wonderful thing. But at the same time, I'm fair enough to say just because I have this family arrangement doesn't mean that I should get advantages that other people don't get. If the problem is taxes are too high such that big families should get tax credits, why don't you just give tax relief, period? Because having a lot of children is not the only reason that somebody might have financial struggles. Maybe you have an ailing family member. Maybe it's just two of you under one roof. Maybe your spouse is ill. And you and your spouse were unable to have children and you have a sick spouse and you have to work extra hard. Are you less deserving of tax credits because you don't have children? What a horrible thing to say. Or it could be, I mean, let's say somebody filed a frivolous lawsuit against you. Totally not your fault. And it's draining your emotional wherewithal and your financial resources. You don't deserve that because you don't also happen to have a bunch of children? I mean, there are all kinds of situations, good and bad, that can lead to challenging financial positions for people to be in. I don't see why I would want, of all people, politicians going around determining which ones are worthy of the largesse of the state and letting people keep more of their money and which are not. Why would you want that? Why don't you just say, have the state take less money from everybody to begin with? So the thinking is just all wrong here. And then he concludes with arguments from Robert F. Kennedy. I mean, if ever there were a derivative bore of a so-called thinker, it's Robert F. Kennedy, right? And he describes him as another original thinker who viewed economics holistically and from a Christian viewpoint. Oh, my heavens. And so he says this, too much, and this is Robert F. Kennedy, and obviously Stephen Cox is endorsing this. Too much and for too long, we seem to have surrendered personal excellence and community values in the mere accumulation of material things. Okay, maybe there's some people who are like this, but I generally haven't met any. And no matter what economic system you're in, people are going to live frivolous lives. If you're going to have a, if you're going to implement the Tucker Carlson policies and make America poorer but more equal or something, people will find ways to fritter their lives away, you know, no matter what the institutional arrangements are. So again, I don't get this. Accumulation of material things liberates people from grinding poverty and frees them to do things that these very critics would themselves admit are more spiritual and high-minded, but yet they never seem to make the connection. Then he says that, you know, gross national product doesn't tell us everything, you know, like anybody ever denied that. And incidentally, on this idea that we think, we free market people think GDP is everything, even that is so kind of, sorry to say this, dumb guy and misplaced, given that not only have we never said that about GDP, but we actually criticize GDP as an economic construct. We actually criticize it for how misleading it is and how incomplete it is. That's what we say about it. And meanwhile, this guy thinks that we're just addicted to GDP. How about you listen for a second? Instead of trumpeting how original your Christian economics is, why don't you take 5 minutes to actually listen to what the other side is saying? So I'll also link to at least one or two episodes I've done on the show about the problems with GDP. Anyway, so here's Robert Kennedy continuing, that he's saying that that figure does not include the beauty of our poetry or the strength of our marriages, the intelligence of our public debate, or the integrity of our public officials. It measures neither our wit nor our courage, neither our wisdom nor our learning, neither our compassion nor our devotion to our country. Okay, well, what do you want me to do with this? Who in his right mind ever thought that it did? And of course, by contrast, the implication here is that the free market is so dumb and focused on material things, even though the free market is not actually focused on things. It just does its job. It's not telling you the purpose of your life is to accumulate stuff. It's just saying, look, if this is what people want, we're going to try to give it to you at the least possible cost so we waste the fewest resources. That's all the market's doing. It's not telling you how you should live or what the highest value is or whether materialism is good or bad. It has nothing to do with any of that. And moreover, the market economy itself is just about voluntary transactions. That's it, just people entering into transactions with each other. So the question is, if you're going to say that, well, GDP doesn't tell us about how good our poetry is and whatever, all right, so what? But what is that saying? Is that saying that if we intervened in more people's transactions, somehow we might get better poetry? I mean, what would the state's involvement have to do with anything? What would abrogating the market economy, what would interfering with the market economy, what would it do to encourage those other things? I don't know. Maybe it would help. Maybe there's some scenario in which that would help. But it's not laid out here. All I get is a lot of highfalutin. It's not even that. It's kind of lowfalutin stuff. Just a lot of flowery language about we shouldn't be focused on material things and we should be focused on relationships. Totally agreed. But I don't see how that's a criticism of what we believe. Now, that's not to say that people don't have struggles that they deal with. But my point is that this whole let's look at the market economy from a Christian perspective thing is just inventing one straw man after the other, and it's leaving unanswered all kinds of critical questions, the critical questions. If an industry is no more, what would you like us to do? Oh, it hollows out a town. I have no doubt that that would put a lot of pressure on a lot of people and it would be very difficult. What is the alternative? You keep it going? I mean, if you're going to make statements like this, you have to at least, instead of pretending that you're morally superior to us because we're actually trying to come up with plausible scenarios for when things like that happen, and you instead are coming up with quotations from Robert F. Kennedy, and that makes you morally superior. That's not helpful. So, all right, look, I'm going to link to this guy's article because you should look at it. Actually, you shouldn't, but I'm going to have it up there anyway, tomwoods.com/1320, along with a few things that I mentioned. I'll certainly have those GDP episodes. We'll get Gene Epstein episodes up there linked on that page. I want to tell you one quick thing before I let you go. I have a listener who created a site, and it's rpmrendering.com. And he says it's a business based around outsourcing architectural graphics, so 3D renderings, drawings, diagrams. And if you go and look at the portfolio section, I mean, this is really amazing work. You'll see numerous buildings and parts of buildings and beautifully rendered. So very, very interesting site, and I hope he continues to add to it. He's just added a blog section. I love stuff like this that is so, so far out of anything I have any skill in whatsoever. But if that kind of stuff interests you, then definitely check out rpmrendering.com because you'll be helping out somebody who listens to the show. And I, again, I'd like to have a situation where we help each other out. So I'll link to that also at tomwoods.com/1320. Of course, you know, why did he get his website mentioned on my show? Because he used my link to get his hosting. And he also, therefore, got a great price on his hosting. And it also means you get access to my private bloggers group where we have hundreds of people who help each other in there. And you get some tutorials to get you up and running. You get linked on my site. Tremendous. So tomwoods.com/1320 is where you can find that. It's rpmrendering.com. If you like what I'm doing, by the way, then I urge you to become a supporting listener of the show. There are many, many fine benefits. One, you get discounts on Liberty Classroom. You get transcripts of all the interviews. You get discount codes for a lot of your favorite libertarian merchants online. You get, in some cases, signed books from me. You get courses. It's unbelievable the stuff you get. Plus membership in my notorious Tom Woods Show elite group. So how do you do that? Go over to supportinglisteners.com, and I'll see you later.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.